Looking at some other news stories making headlines, we move now to the Keystone XL, the six-year battle over the controversial proposal to funnel that heavy crude oil from the tar sands of Canada to the Gulf Coast took another turn this week, as we talked about yesterday, after both houses of the lame duck Congress moved to vote on the Keystone XL pipeline. The legislation is barreling through Congress, and it heads to the Oval Office most likely by next week. Obama will have to make a decision as to whether he's going to support it or veto it. And obviously, it's leading to a considerable amount of discussion, you know, on the television networks, and the Republicans speaking strongly in support of it, but also Democrats, as we see in the specific campaign of Mary Landrieu in Louisiana, the senator who's pushing it through the Senate. Joining us now to talk about this is Jamie Henn, who's a strategy and communications director for 350.org. Jamie, thank you for joining us this early morning. Your thoughts about how this is being pushed through? It's being framed almost entirely as a political issue at this point. The implications for the planet are kind of pushed aside. But what are your thoughts about this as it moves through the Congress this quickly?
Well, good to be with you all this morning. And yes, this is certainly the usual congressional shenanigans. They did not wait long during the lame duck session to get back to their usual business of politics and setting aside the important issues facing this country. You know, I think the key thing to recognize is this really is all about Mary Landrieu's election. You know, Dana Milbank was writing in the Washington Post and joked that they should retitle this bill the Mary Landrieu Preservation Act of 2014. Just late last night, the House passed a version of the bill, but they passed it with the lowest amount of Democratic support on any keystone measure that the House has passed, that the House has voted on this thing something like six or seven times to no avail. So that's a good sign that Democrats actually aren't buying Mary Landrieu's bill of goods and are saying, look, you're likely going to lose your Senate seat in Louisiana anyways, and we don't need to give you this pipeline as a going away president. So we're going to see what happens. The vote in the Senate will be on Tuesday. We're certainly fighting hard to push back on any senator who is on the fence on that, putting a lot of phone calls in. It looks like there'll be a real fight to try and get the 60 votes that Landrieu and Republicans need to push this thing through the Senate. So it may yet hold in Congress, which means that the president can continue to rely on the process underway to judge the impacts of this pipeline, and we think ultimately move towards rejecting it.
What is that impact? Again, because the coverage that I've seen and read is very limited in terms of what that impact is, but 350.org, your organization, has been focusing specifically on the kinds of oil that the tar sands represents and what it does mean for this issue of climate change.
That's right. And shocking, huh, that the media hasn't quite covered all the environmental impacts of a project. You know, here's the deal with this pipeline and why it's such a big deal. Keystone XL would bring over 800,000 barrels a day of tar sands oil from Alberta, Canada, down to the Gulf Coast of Mexico. The tar sands is really the problem here. Tar sands fuel is some of the dirtiest fuel on the planet. It's 17% more greenhouse gas intensive than regular crude, which means every barrel you burn is even worse for the climate. Scientists have referred to it as Keystone XL, as a fuse to the largest carbon bomb in North America. And one of our leading top scientists, Dr. James Hansen, who used to be at NASA, said that, you know, to fully developing the tar sands would be, quote, game over for the planet. So this is a big problem for climate change, and Keystone is a key way for the industry to really ramp up its expansion of the tar sands. Now, that's not to mention all the risks of spills along the route. The pipeline crosses one of North America's largest sources of fresh drinking water, and all the dangers that it poses to refinery communities and other people that have to live with both the emissions that come from refining tar sands and, of course, the people that live near the source comes with the mining of it. So as people have said, this pipeline really is all risk and no reward. It runs right through America. It's mostly Dane for export. There's a lot of reason why so many people are standing up against it.
I was going to ask you, Jamie Henn, to talk about that because, again, it's so often presented. Supporters of the project, both Democrats and Republicans, talk about the jobs creation, the quote-unquote energy independence. I still don't understand what energy independence actually means, but that they point to the economic boon that would be created by these 42,000-plus jobs that supposedly will emanate from this project. And it's often presented as these are local communities communities and initiatives that are really clamoring for the construction of the project. You, as a strategy and communications director of 350.org, what have you seen in the communities that would be affected by the construction of the Keystone XL?
Yeah, well, not surprisingly, we've seen the exact opposite, which is that communities are really standing up to fight against this project. Earlier this year, we did a big rally in Washington, D.C., and actually just helped support it. It was led by a group called the Cowboy and Indian Alliance, which is ranchers, farmers, and indigenous leaders along the pipeline route who came all the way to Washington, D.C. and put up teepees and a covered wagon on the National Mall for an entire week to really demonstrate that, listen, you're not hearing our voices. We don't want this project going through our land. The jobs issue has been one of the most pervasive myths about this project, and Fox News has helped make it so. When you actually read through the State Department's report on Keystone XL, it says that there might be up to 42,000 temporary jobs, but they actually measure that in working hours. So it's not even actually that many jobs. It's just temporary positions that would be changed around. The permanent jobs related with the pipeline is 32, which is less than building a shopping mall. So this is not a job creation solution. It does create some jobs. And I think, the country is struggling to move and employ people, which is why it would be so much more a better strategy to begin to put real money into renewable energy or any other host of ways to begin to really address the crisis. Every dollar invested in renewables creates 3 jobs compared to the 1 created in fossil fuels when you dump money down that hole. So there is a need for a job creation program, but dangerous leaky pipeline like Keystone XL, isn't it?
It's like a double whammy this week. On the one hand, you had the discussions in China between the two presidents of China and the United States talking about some kind of climate change and energy and reduction initiatives. But on the other hand, you have this Senate and Congress pushing forward the Keystone XL. The pressure on Obama right now politically, as the right and particularly the leadership in the Congress keeps pointing to his unilateral kind of executive authority that he's totally taking advantage of and using illegally, unconstitutionally, as many of them have already pointed to, puts him in a lot of pressure if this is passed next week. The White House continues to refer to this as they have a dim view of these kinds of legislative proposals. That's their exact words, but there's no clear indication as to what he's going to do. What happens if Obama signs this into law, which, again, we're still not clear on that?
Well, I think that he will probably veto a bill that gets to his desk. That's what the statements that we've heard from the White House spokesperson, and I think we have every indication that they'll follow through on that. And I think that he has to. I mean, the announcement in China was a good move forward. It committed the U.S. to actually beginning to continue down the path of carbon dioxide reductions. But it really means nothing if you go and approve a giant project like Keystone XL. I mean, you actually have to do things to reduce carbon dioxide emissions. You can't just pledge to do it on paper, as Bill McKibben, our founder, wrote the other day. It would be like taking a sobriety pledge at AA and then going out and buying an entire keg of beer. Mm-hmm. The two just don't go together. So if President Obama does the right thing and continues to have a little bit of the additional swagger that we've seen from him lately, I think that he'll go ahead and veto Keystone and put it off the table. If he did approve the project, the fight would be by no means over. Thousands of people have pledged civil disobedience to put pressure on the White House as well as to block the project on the ground. So this would continue, and it would continue to be a flashpoint that can really help, I think, energize a movement that is really doing what's necessary to combat climate change, which is figuring out ways to keep fossil fuels in the ground and continue this transition to renewable energy.
Excellent. Jamie Henn, Strategy and Communications Director at 350.org. Thanks for joining us and filling us in on that. 350.org, that's the website. Pretty straightforward. For more information, take a look at that, as well as some of Jamie's writing on the issue. Thanks a lot again for being with us this morning.
Good to be with you.